gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker, Keegan M. from Oceano.
All right, I'm Keegan and I'm an alcoholic. So bear with me because I have never had to speak for this long before. So I let God go first, so I feel okay that he's going to do what he's going to do. My sobriety date is August 27th, 2023. When I got in these rooms, I really didn't have any idea what an alcoholic was or what that meant. I just knew my life had been going to absolute crap, and I was losing everything that I loved the most, and I couldn't do anything about it, and I couldn't stop drinking no matter how hard I tried. I wish I had a cool origin story. I wish I said I had crazy stories of a life that was hard, that was this or that, but it really wasn't. You know, I had loving parents. I had good brothers and sisters. I had a good, stable home. I had no alcohol in my home. So, you know, when I was younger, it's funny that I'm standing at this podium. When I was in high school, I actually preached in high school, and I preached in college, thinking that that was going to be my life and that's what I was going to do. But, you know, fast forward to when I was 19 years old, what I know now, which I didn't know then, was that I lived a life full of fear, selfishness. And I'm going to read this out of the book because that's going to kind of lead into what got me really to take my first drink. And most of you, or a lot of you, probably know this in page 62. I don't know where I lost my place right there, but you know, it says selfishness, self-centeredness. This, we think, is the root of our troubles. Driven by hundreds of forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that we, at some time in the past, have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. You know, and then at the end it says, neither could we reduce our self-centeredness, made much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. So, you know, I thought I had a relationship with this, you know, God of my understanding when I was younger. I absolutely did. But the reality of it was that I was completely selfish and I was completely fearful. And my whole life, I wanted to fit in. I was uncomfortable in my own skin. I've been told that. I've heard that comment. I really didn't feel like it belonged, but I tried my best to be what I call a chameleon. So I would chameleon to everybody around me to be who you wanted me to be. But inside, I felt horrible. I felt miserable, scared, all the things, you know. And so finally in college, when I got broken out of that whole, insulation of church, I guess you want to call it, that fear just was getting crazy. And I really didn't know how to handle it. And I just noticed everyone was partying, having a good time. Guys were getting the girls that I wanted. I couldn't get them. I was just this good kid. I was miserable. So I asked a guy who was actually involved in the church with me, you know, I just kept complaining to him about what's this drinking thing all about. So ironically, this guy who was my youth intern decided to get me drunk so that I could just basically get drunk, get a hangover, and never want to do it again. That was what he thought because I didn't have alcohol. I've never had alcohol. I didn't have a family of alcohol. He didn't have a family of alcoholics. He didn't know. He just tried to get me. So basically, he mixed Old Milwaukee with Frangelico. And so that, if you guys know those two drinks, those are just things that shouldn't be together. They're not for enjoyment. They're just crappy on both ends of the spectrum. And I took that drink, and it was the best moment of my life at that point. You know, I had a feeling that I got at that moment that I felt all those fears, all that stuff go away. You know, I don't want to say I felt invincible, but I felt pretty close to it at that moment. And, you know, I couldn't wait to have and I did wake up hungover. I did throw up multiple times. It was just me and this dude having drinks. It wasn't some glamorous party or anything like that. But man, I could not wait to get my hands on the next drink. And so there it began, you know. And at that time, I had no idea, again, what alcoholism was. So I just drank anytime I could drink, as much as I can drink, whenever I could drink. And I thought I fit in. You know, I went to a college. I went to UCSB. And I thought that that's what everybody did. I could always rationalize the conditions. You know, there's people that I could point out that drank more than me, that had more consequences than I had. So I really didn't think I had a problem, though if you looked at all the things that happened to me in a very quick period of time from 19 to 22, DUI, hospital visits, jail, night in jail, many a nights being hucked over somebody's shoulder, not knowing where I was going to end up, blackouts every single time I drank. But I just thought that was normal. You know, I really didn't see the damage that it was causing. I just wanted to have my next drink and I thought I was having fun. And in fact, I ended up not finishing school. So, I mean, all of these things happened, and I never once did I ever believe that it was alcohol was the problem. You know, I could chalk up things that had happened, people that had been, a person I knew had been shot and killed in college. That was why I didn't fall. That's why I needed a drink, right? I needed to do all these things just to feel this certain way, but that has to be normal. So what I did was, what I now know and what I've learned in the rooms is a geographic. I moved down to Orange County thinking I could reset, do things, and to be honest, things got all right for a little while. You know, I kind of set a plan that I would have for drinking. I kind of changed my habits a little bit, and things got a lot better. I became successful in the job that I work at now. I met the woman of my dreams. I got to start a family, had two amazing daughters. And what's funny is I thought that I had had my drinking in control. I thought life was at its best. But if I were to really look inside of me, I couldn't appreciate anything, absolutely anything around me. I needed more. I wanted more. And I still felt like a piece of shit, excuse my language, and a piece of crap inside no matter what I had. And my drinking, as it said in the room, started to progress without my permission. I started drinking a little more, but not a whole lot more, more than my wife was maybe comfortable with. But not more than I could still chalk around people around me. And so things started to deteriorate a little bit in our relationship. So again, I made another geographic and I came up to the Central Coast. I grew up in Lompoc actually. And I decided I wanted to move the families up here. And I felt that that was what was causing me to be who I was and why I was. It was because I wasn't a big city kid. Orange County was too big. I needed to be back to where I grew up, my roots, a small town, chill. Things would get better. I could restart, turn the page, la-da-da-da-da. So moved up here. And of course, what any alcoholic does, finds the nearest place that they want to drink and wants to make that their home. But I didn't realize that. I just thought I wanted to be part of a brewery, become part of. And that's really what I was trying to do, because in my own skin, I wasn't comfortable. I didn't realize that my faith that I thought I had was going farther and farther away from me. My family, my wife and I relationship was getting farther and farther apart, you know, and at the moment, in the early time when I came here, my relationship with my daughters were still good, but they were young, you know, they were 3 and 3 months, so they really didn't know. And as my drinking progressed and my fear progressed and how I interacted with everyone just got worse and worse, that relationship with my daughter started to disintegrate as well. Really, when it got to the final end of my drinking, you know, I qualify as an alcoholic, like I said earlier, not because I had a crazy upbringing, not because I drank X amount of alcohol, not because I had gotten X amount of trouble, which I did get in a lot of trouble in college. But the reason I'm an alcoholic is because I have an allergy of the body and obsession of the mind. And these are things I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't realize that when I take that first drink, all bets are off. I didn't realize that I had no control. I thought I could control it. I have what the book says, the delusion that I could control my drinking. And so, you know, things started to slowly get worse. And not slow, I mean, slowly at first, and then it started to speed up. You know, COVID didn't help it out. Once again, I blamed conditions. I worked in a retail job where I dealt with the public, where I was still open during COVID. And so I just blamed everybody's anger and everyone's thing on why I was drinking. And then all those yets started to go away. All those things that I said that I would never do started to happen. You know, I promised I would never drink during work. I started drinking on lunch break. I would never drink before work. Started having to have a drink before I went to work. I would never drink. I had gotten a DUI, and I say I would never drink and drive, but I would always drink at a bar and then drive home. But my yet was I would never drink while I was driving, right? That was my alcoholic brain. That was different. That was completely different. And that went out the window, too. I was driving from Templeton down AG, drinking the whole way back every day on the whole. And by the end of it, the whole way there every day. And I still didn't believe that I had an alcohol problem. I just thought I wasn't managing it correctly. And that's really what I thought. I honestly did. And, you know, things just kept progressing, getting worse. Luckily, my job, I had slowly, people in my job were starting to feel, I would get that nudge from my boss. You know, somebody said your breath smells a little like beer right now. Just want to let you know. Oh, you know, maybe it's because I was drinking a little too much last night. I wasn't about to say that I was drinking 2 hours earlier, right? And I started, those hints were coming, but nothing stopped me, you know? And left to my own device, I don't think I would have ever stopped. I don't think that, and I know now I would never have stopped. Because what I didn't see happening was that alcohol had become the absolute god of my life. The absolute king alcohol was ruling my life. Everything I needed to do had to have alcohol. And I hadn't realized it until the day of my moment of clarity. And at that day, you know, coming up to there, I needed alcohol when things were bad. I needed alcohol when things were good. I needed alcohol in the middle. I needed it all. I needed it for every single thing I did. And I had justified in my head for years why and where. And ultimately what it came down to was I got to the moment where for whatever reason, my higher power, I like to call him God, kind of unveiled for a moment, just a moment, that all the crap that was going on in my life, all the things was because of my doing. It was me. I was the reason why this. It wasn't conditions. It wasn't causes. It wasn't anything like that. It was me. And it, you know, I remember that night clearly because my oldest daughter, who is the greatest blessing, both of my daughters are the most amazing blessings of my life. My oldest daughter was born on my birthday. And so what a better birthday present could you ever have? And I remember thinking that at that time, how amazing that was. You know, even though, to be honest, even on that day, because it was my birthday, my wife was in labor for whatever, 21 hours, and was born. And all I can think of was the moment she needed a rest and my daughter went into the ICU or whatever it is for jaundice. All I could think of was, hey, do you mind if I go get a beer? It's my birthday. You know, and luckily for me at that time, my daughter, well, I don't know if lucky, but my wife at the time was so exhausted. She's like, oh yeah, totally. But I needed a beer regardless. There's a moment, that was the greatest moment of my life at the moment. And I still needed to have alcohol in order for me to appreciate anything, to enjoy anything. And even then I couldn't see it. So I get to that point, I'm at my house, I'm having a fantasy football draft. I've been lying about my drinking now for about a month or 2 months to my wife. She's at wit's end because she doesn't understand why, if I'm not drinking, am I still an a-hole? Which we can all laugh because all of us know that left to our own devices, at least for me, this alcoholic, I'm going to be that on my own device with drinking or without drinking. But I didn't know that yet. I had no idea. You know, I was also just blaming alcohol by this point. And then and about a week earlier, it had been my anniversary, and I had been lying and lying and lying, and what I should have done is got off work and just come home and celebrate that night with my wife. We had it all lined up, picking my daughter. The only thing I could think of doing was going to the Elks Lodge in San Luis and having a drink. You know, and I remember that phone call because I had forgotten that I'd given my wife my location because I had gone on a backpack trip earlier in the month. So she had my location and she just calls and goes, why are you at the bar right now? Like, what are you doing right now? And that moment wasn't a moment of clarity, but it was the first time that I began to be honest about my drinking. And I told her, I don't know how to stop this. It's harder than I thought. This is way harder than I thought it was going to be. But that's all I said. And so, you know, fast forward to that fantasy football draft. I'm drinking. I'm just chalked. I've already given up lying at this point. I'm just like, I'm going to have this. I'm drinking. It's fantasy football. My wife had just left for the weekend to go to a funeral and left me with my two daughters. And here I am drinking when I'm not supposed to. Anyways, my daughters locked themselves in their room. I completely embarrassed my daughter, mortified my daughter in front of everybody, called her out in front of a bunch of guys. And, you know, I got a phone call from my wife saying, I'm on my way home right now. I'm leaving you right now. I'm going to leave you when I get home. Your parents are coming right now. And for whatever reason, at that moment is when I got that glimpse. I got a moment that I was, like I said before, I was the problem. And I remember that night, I went through all the, there's a gigantic, I caused even more trauma that night, more trauma with my family, a bunch of stuff. Doesn't need to be talked about. But regardless, as I sat there, I woke up in the morning, and I prayed, I did a prayer that I had never prayed before. Now, mind you, I grew up in the church. I was a preacher. I prayed hundreds of times. But what I didn't know is that I prayed selfishly, like it says in this book. I was a selfish, self-will run riot, right? And so I finally did a prayer that said, God, I don't know what to do. That's all it was. It wasn't, God, please save me. Please help me. Please do this and do that so I could have my family back. I just said, God, I don't know what to do. And at that moment, my higher power I know now performed a miracle. At that moment, took the cessation of drink from me. You know, I know that that's a one day at a time. I'm not saying that's going to be, that's he removed my alcoholism, but he removed at that moment the want to drink. And I, for the first time, was willing to admit I had a problem. I didn't know what an alcoholic was, but I had a problem and I needed help. And so rehab is part of my story. I did go to rehab. I don't say that rehab is definitely not a priority to be sober. But for this alcoholic, I needed to go to rehab. And what I've learned, my wife gently reminded me a few weeks ago that rehab wasn't just for me. It was for my family because they needed to be the heck away from me. And they needed time away from me. And so went to rehab. But the greatest thing that ever happened at rehab was that it introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, even though I had gone to rehab, I still had that selfish part of me that wanted to be in control of it because of my fear. So I tried to run that rehab like a boss. You know, I felt like I did. I got all the privileges I wanted. I got everything I wanted. So I still really hadn't given up self. But I did stop drinking, which I'm grateful. And it did introduce me to Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I was broken at that point that I was listening to everything rehab taught me, all the technical stuff and jargon about being an alcoholic or the chemical this and that and this. But the one thing that I'm so grateful that I listened to was go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And so when I got out of rehab, I looked at the meetings that my old counselor did that. And the other thing I did is I got a temporary sponsor when I was in rehab. So those are the two things that I'm super grateful for rehab. And for what God did through rehab for me. So not saying you need rehab. Alcoholics Anonymous is sufficient. God's sufficient enough. But if rehab's part of your story, that's fine. It can, as long as it leads you to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to my first meeting. My first meeting was actually the Serenity Group up in Arroyo Grande. But that is the first time that I actually had a moment of serenity is walking in, no pun intended, is walking into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my first meeting was in Santa Barbara at that rehab, and the joy that was in the room, that was something I didn't think was possible when you could, by not drinking. I didn't think you could be happy. I didn't think you could laugh. I didn't think it was possible to have any of that. But when I saw that, I knew there might be something. But when I walked into that room of serenity, I knew that I might have hope. You know, my wife was still, luckily for me, my wife ended up staying just on the fringes, you know, because she decided not to leave. But my, you know, when I got out of rehab, I thought that meant I was solved. I thought I needed to go to AA, but I thought that all my problems were going to be solved by going to rehab. And I was completely wrong on that. When I tried to go home, my oldest daughter told my wife that if I go home, she's going to leave the house. She won't live in that home if her dad lives in that house. And so again, that was a wake up call for me, realizing that what I thought I could do and solve on my own was going to happen the way I wanted it. So I just ended up living on a couch of a friend, you know. But I still went to meetings. Eventually, I found my way. A few meetings later, I was invited to the Village Group in Oceana. I don't know if some of you have been there. Some familiar faces I see in here, and the Village Group is what I call now my home group, and that is where I found and learned about the solution. You know, I told you I had a temporary sponsor. I did work the steps with that sponsor, but our relationship was long distance. He was far away. We only met once a week. And I did do the steps, but if I'm completely honest, I don't think I was being fully honest with him or God in that. I didn't tell him everything. I didn't write down everything. But I did do the steps, and I was getting better. But the biggest thing, again, that I can say is that I was willing enough, that I was broken enough from what alcohol had done to me all those years, or not alcohol, what I'd done to myself by drinking, is that I was willing to listen. So when I was in that Village Group, all I did was listen. And, you know, the term at the Village Group is when you go in, they say, shut up, sit down and shut up. You know, don't talk, don't speak. But that's not the case, because, you know, I know Kim here, in this room. And Kim gave me my very first hug in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so that hug, you know, I talk about that hug because when I first started going to the rooms of alcoholics, I felt like a piece of crap. I didn't feel worthy enough for anybody. I didn't feel worthy enough to love. I didn't feel worthy for anything. But that hug was just another glimpse to my higher power saying, you are worthy. You are welcome. And I looked in those rooms and I'm like, man, I am not like any of these people. You know, and I can look and I can look in this room now, and if I want to look on that level, I don't know how many people in this room I would hang out with on a regular basis. I just don't. But I know that right now with the fellowship I have in Alcoholics Anonymous, and because we're all connected in recovery, I can hang out with any one of you guys and have an amazing time because we're all focused on the same thing as our recovery and sobriety. So fast forward, I go into those rooms, I'm sitting down listening, and there's a lot of sobriety in that room. And I'm grateful for every one of those men and women in that room because they took the time to reach their hand out. They took the time to listen to my BS and my attempt to think I got this. And eventually I met a man in that room who asked me, have you read the big book? And I'm like, well, I've read parts. You know, I've read little bits and bits of this first sponsor. And I am grateful for my first sponsor. He took the time. He was new in the program. He did what he did his experience at the Open, and I'm grateful for that. But he did it through a way that I didn't read through the book. So this gentleman asked me, do you want to read the book? And I said, I would love to. And then it's amazing how God works in miracles in your lives, because this man who ended up becoming my sponsor and still my sponsor today ended up living six houses away from me. And random, couldn't have done that. That was God doing for me what I couldn't do. So that man started reading that book with me one page at a time. And eventually I asked him to be my sponsor. I told him I'm grateful for you, but I'm gonna take another sponsor, which I was scared to death to do, but I found it's okay. It's okay to do as long as you're being honest. And the reason why is because you feel that that's where God's moving you to, you know? And so I reworked the steps with this man and I was completely honest. And that's where I learned all the things I know about Alcoholics Anonymous now and about being an alcoholic. You know, I learned one of the biggest things that I've learned from my sponsor today is listen for the question, because I didn't realize that I had a listening problem. You know, I always thought that I had the answer, which means I only needed to listen to as much as you told me until I could give you the answer I needed to give you, you know, until I could talk. And, you know, I get to live a life today that is crazier and wilder and better than I could ever dream from. And that's only though because I've worked the steps throughout the steps designed. I don't know where your steps are, to be honest. Right there, there you go. Your steps are designed right there. I had to go from 1 to 12, not 12 to 1, not 1 to 11. I had to go 1 through. I had to realize that my life was unmanageable. And that was a big wake-up call. But when I was able to sit down and shut up, I could see all the areas of my life that were just out of control, not just drinking. But every area in my life was out of control. And then when I got to three was when I started doing my inventory and I started making my amends, is when I realized that I never had a faith in God. You know, I had a faith in my parents' faith, but I never had a true faith in a God of my understanding. And I only had a faith in what youth group was and all that stuff, but I never had faith. I had faith in myself, even though I hated myself and didn't trust myself and was fearful. I still have faith in myself, if that makes sense, which doesn't make sense, right? It's absolutely ridiculous and crazy, but that's how I operated in my life. So when I went through those steps, I was able to truly give my life to a higher power that I had never really done before, you know? And I started learning the tools after I was reading through the book, listening to others. I started getting the spiritual toolkit. And now the things that I do today, the things that I do to stay sober, you know, because this is a person who from 19 until 40, 44, you know, I only went one time 30 days. And after that, maybe 2 days, I'm not taking a drink every single day, multiple times a day for 20 plus years, that I get to stay away from a drink one day at a time. And I do that by doing three important things. I have a regular meeting pattern. I don't shy away from that. I go to the Village Group. You'll find me there most mornings at 7 a.m. On Sundays, I do go to a men's stag. I do recommend for all the men in this room, if you don't go to one, I do recommend going to a men's stag. And when I go, I go to a book study as well for my meeting patterns. I try to include all those because those keep the book alive through meetings, and I get to hear God speaks through every person at a meeting that I go to. Whether it's for me, and how I'm living, or things that I can do and improve and trust God more. If it be a newcomer or someone who has 30 years of experience, it doesn't matter. God speaks to me through every single person in the room. And I've been blown away by how he does that. I call him a he. Doesn't have to be a he for anyone who wants him. Doesn't have to be God either, but it just can't be you. Can't be me. And so I have the regular meeting pattern. I have a spiritual breakfast, is what my sponsor's sponsor likes to refer to it as. And what that means is I get up in the morning and I start with gratitude. If I don't, I have a freaking mind crusher in my head that even though I'm not drinking, I will start screwing up my day from the ground up. You know, I will, just the fact that I'm not drinking doesn't mean I have an amazing life. It does mean I have a chance at an amazing life, and I have a chance to have this relationship with a God, a loving God, who loves me no matter what. And so I have to wake up every morning. If I can do it every morning, I wake up with the gratitude. I do my best to read a daily reflection. And then I pray, and I start praying for other people, and I pray for God's will for today, only today. I don't pray for myself anymore, other than I can do my best to follow God's will. That's the only prayer I have for myself. But I do pray for other alcoholics. I pray for my family. I pray for other people in the morning. And then I'll read a little bit of the book, and then I go to a meeting. And that's my spiritual breakfast. Now, I would love to say that I get to do that, and I freaking have an amazing day every day, and that I don't try to screw it up on my own, but that'd be absolute BS. And I know that I need to have regular contact with my higher power, because I will screw that up in a heartbeat, in an hour. And for my drive, you know, I work here in town now, but I could drive, I could have an amazing morning, and from that drive from AG to Santa Maria, one car cutting me off, one stoplight too long, one whatever it can be, I can give you a million excuses. I could become that a-hole and that wanted person to be in control just like that. So I know that I have to be in constant contact with my higher power on a regular basis. Because I know that I don't have lack of knowledge. I grew up in the church. I grew up on how to live right. And I know that I'm not supposed to drink. I know what drinking does to me, but I don't have the power to stop it. I need a power greater than myself to do that. And I have to have that relationship for him to do that, for me to be able to have that life. And then finally, meeting patterns, a relationship with my higher power, putting God first in everything I do. And finally, I gotta give it away. I gotta work with other alcoholics. And, you know, that scared the living crap out of me at first. I remember the first time my sponsor was like, all right, go talk to that guy right now. And I was like, absolutely not. Are you kidding me? What do I have to say? But again, it's not about me. It's about God working through me. It's not about what I can do. It's about what he's going to do, about the message that I have through Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I have the privilege, and I'm super grateful, the privilege to sponsor a couple guys right now. I've sponsored other guys who've fallen away. I've got a guy right now who's about to finish all 12 steps and has a year of sobriety. And that's not because of me, but I'm so grateful I get to be part of that because it's kept me sober. You know, no matter the guys that I've sponsored that have gone away, that haven't done it, haven't picked it up, it doesn't matter, because every time I work with them is another time that I'm jumping in that book. It's another time that I get to relive what my higher power has done in my life as well and be grateful for that. And so not only is sponsoring the thing, because you're not always, God's going to send a sponsee to you when you're going to send a sponsee. It's not about me. It's just me being available, and I've learned that. So how do I be available? I just reach my hand out at meetings. To a newcomer, I reach out my hands to people that I know at the meetings, and I just shoot this. Sorry, I got kids here, so I got to watch my eyes. But I just, you know, talk about life, and I talk about recovery, and I talk about solution. And I find that when I do that, I get out of myself. You know, I mentioned earlier that rock crusher I mentioned just a little bit ago, every hour I can snap like this. My brain, my alcoholic brain, will tell me that I need to be in control of the situation. And if I don't give it away and let go and start talking to other alcoholics, I don't have a chance. And so, you know, my life today, again, is the greatest life I've ever lived. That family that was falling apart is the best that we've ever been today. You know, there's the promises that it talks about, and those promises have come true, but I know that it's just one day at a time. I get those promises today. Tomorrow's another day. You know, I heard a thing tonight, it was great. I get to go to bed tonight sober. But I still wake up tomorrow an alcoholic, you know, and I still need to do all these things one day at a time. You know, that relationship with that oldest daughter is the best it ever has been. Better than it was before. Well, never. I was drinking when she was born, so I can't say before I started drinking. But it was better than it ever was before. And now that daughter hugs me every single time she sees me. And that's God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. There was nothing I could have done to do that. That was absolutely a higher power. And so I get to live a life today that I look for what ways I can contribute and what ways I can give it away. And I can, it says contribute to the stream of life in the big book, you know, and that's what I do. I realize too, I've heard in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, especially my home group, it's not just about talking to another alcoholic. I have to practice these affairs and I practice this program in all my affairs. So I need to be humble. I need to stay out of the way. I need to contribute in every area I can, be a boss at work, be it a father, be it a son, be it a brother. I have to do that in all those areas. I don't get to just hide in the rooms. I got to do that everywhere. And when I get to do that, when I get to trust my higher power, when I get to take suggestions from people in the rooms, from my sponsor, usually those things go well. Usually when they're not, it's usually me once again taking back that will. So, you know, I don't know how much more. I got about 11 more minutes. I don't know if I can talk that much more. It seems like it's been a while, but I can't reiterate enough the importance of those three things, of having a higher power, figuring out power greater than yourself. It doesn't have to be God. It can be people. It can be somebody. It could be this group of drunks, G-O-D. It could be the rooms. You know, it just can't be you. It couldn't be me. And you have to have a regular meeting pattern because it's important. I've learned it's important for two reasons. It's important so people know where I'm at. Know when things are going on, they can check in on me. But it's also important for a newcomer to see that I'm in the room on a regular basis, that this works. You know, I was able to go, privilege of going to a birthday meeting the other night, and God, those are amazing. If you've never been to a major birthday meeting, not the chip meeting, but a big birthday meeting, just celebrating sobriety, there's so much gratitude in those rooms that it's absolutely amazing. I've never had my bucket filled as much as going to one of those in just a meeting format. You know, working with others, my bucket's filled, letting God in front, my bucket gets filled for those things. But man, in terms of meeting, going to a birthday meeting, it's far none. So a regular meeting pattern, having a higher power, and finally, being able to work and give it away. You know, a good buddy of mine, a good friend of mine, George, loves to say, he loves to call him a sober thief, you know, and I don't ever want to be a sober thief. I don't ever want to not give this away because I am so grateful for the life I have today that, you know, it took a while. It took a little bit in that year of sobriety of realizing that, you know, I used to balance meetings. I used to worry about meetings and my family. And I can't do this. What can I do that? But I've learned that if I put God first and put sobriety second, the rest is going to work. And I've also learned that if I put anything above those, that's the second thing that I'm going to lose. I'm going to lose my sobriety first and then I'm going to lose that, be it my family, my friends, anything. So I know that I need to do that on a regular basis. And so I do that to the best of my abilities. I'm a big advocate for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I have to really pay attention to the 12 traditions because I would love to shout it to the rooftop sometimes. You know, I don't post it. I don't post anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. But man, I know that the only way I can do it is keep reaching out my hand and keep being able to talk about my experience, strength, and hope. And I will do that every chance I get. And so I'm just grateful that you, Matt, that you asked me to be here. And I'm grateful for getting the opportunity to speak in front of you. So thank you, guys. That's all I got. Thank you.
All right, let's give Keegan another round of applause.